You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to our first of three podcasts on asthma hosted by Med Learning Group, titled Reducing the Usage of Oral Corticosteroids in the Management of Asthma, a part of the BREATHE initiative. This series was designed to meet the educational needs of community primary care clinicians, allergists, immunologists, pulmonologists, otolaryngologists, and other members of the multidisciplinary team. My name is Dave Chapman, and I'll be your host for today's podcast. In this episode, we'll examine the management of patients with moderate to severe asthma, the treatment challenges, advantages of biologic medications, and the use of referrals to asthma specialists, all to optimize patient outcomes. Joining me today is Dr. Nick Hanania. Dr. Hanania is professor of pulmonary medicine at Baylor College of Medicine and director of the Airways Clinical Research Center, Baylor College of Medicine, and also chief of pulmonary critical care sleep medicine at Ben Taub Hospital in Houston, Texas. Dr. Hanania, thank you for joining us and welcome.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, let's just jump right into a case. And let's begin with a brief discussion about Mr. Steven. He's a 54-year-old male who is 5'10", 174 pounds. In 2019, he was initially diagnosed with severe persistent asthma with shortness of breath on any exertion and frequent nocturnal awakening approximately twice a week. He now presents to his primary care provider with the following: frequent productive cough with whitish sputum, exacerbations every 1 to 2 months that require steroids, positive skin allergy tests to seemingly everything. He had already tried environmental control. His past medical history is significant for chronic sinusitis with anosmia and nasal polyps, also gastroesophageal reflux disease. His primary asthma medications were fluticasone, salmeterol inhaler twice daily, along with montelukast. So with that introduction, Dr. Hanania, what additional physical examination or laboratory findings would you find helpful in evaluating this particular patient?
Well, Dave, obviously this is a middle-aged man who has troublesome asthma, which is late onset, looks like an allergic phenotype because of his allergy testing and upper airway symptoms, multiple comorbidities. So obviously, when I get a patient like this, I have to confirm the diagnosis, which I'm, in this patient, it sounds like the diagnosis was made. But if it wasn't, then I would like to examine his chest and upper airway. People forget that asthmatics, for managing asthma, we have to manage the whole airway, united airway approach. So I pay a big attention to his nasal passages and look at his nose and sinuses. And then, of course, examining his chest. Regarding testing, I would like to look at spirometry to see what his lung function is, if he's had it. If he hasn't, I mean, I'll arrange for one. Also would like to look at his blood profile and maybe the total IgE level and some biomarkers like blood eosinophils. And in our clinic in pulmonary, we measure exhaled nitric oxide, which is another biomarker that may help me understand how much airway inflammation he has. And obviously, in his case also, I would like to examine his skin. Eczema and atopic dermatitis is not uncommon in patients with asthma. And then, of course, the heart and other systems as part of a general physical exam.
Great. Thank you for that. I'm curious, given with how this patient presents, can you provide insights as to how and when you would expect this type of patient to be referred to a specialist?
Yeah, obviously this gentleman is sick. I mean, I say sick because even though most asthmatics are pretty happy in a primary care setting and they usually are easily managed there, about 10% of patients with asthma who have severe disease, which looks like he may have one of these, should be seen by a specialist, either an allergist or a pulmonologist. I think the most frequent indication for referral is if patient does not do well with optimal therapy and has repeated exacerbation. In his case, one of the biggest concern is that he's had exacerbations every 1 to 2 months requiring steroids. That's like not a normal asthmatics. In fact, that should be a big red flag for him to be seen by a specialist. In fact, Gina suggests that if patients require steroids more than twice a year, they should automatically be seen by a specialist. In addition, we don't know if he was hospitalized, but if he was hospitalized even once, he should be seen by a specialist. Additional reasons to refer to specialists is if testing is not available in primary care setting. You know, some our primary care colleagues are not comfortable doing physiologic testing or other testing. I think that's another reason for him to be seen by a specialist. And then obviously another one is managing comorbidities. In this patient, he has chronic sinusitis. He cannot smell. He has nasal polyps. So this is a patient that he probably should be referred to not only a pulmonary or an allergy specialist, but maybe an ENT doctor. There are other reasons why we should be seeing patients like him. And most of the time it's focused on disease control and exacerbation and increased risk. And usually we try to do sort of a multidisciplinary approach for these patients. And then obviously once we stabilize them, we can send them back to their primary care for follow-up.
Great. I'm curious, while you were talking, I just thought, I mean, what is your typical patient that's referred to you? Would Mr. Stevens be a good example of that? Or does he have more disease or less disease? Or I'm curious.
Yeah, most of the ones we tend to see the tip of the iceberg. Obviously, as I said, majority of asthmatics don't need to be seen by a specialist. But somebody who is requiring steroids, has had frequent exacerbation and other comorbidities, is probably the most frequent reason for us to see patients. Sometimes we get referrals if the primary care physician or clinician is not sure about asthma. As you know, asthma mimickers are pretty common. So if the diagnosis is questionable and they need further testing, that's another reason for us to see the patient to help reach to a diagnosis. This patient has classic symptoms, you know, coughing and shortness of breath, wheezing, but not all asthmatics present very just as black and white. So sometimes doing more testing is another indication for us to see these patients. And then sometimes we see these patients because they come from the emergency department or from the hospitalist. So we don't just get patients from primary care. We often get patients referred once they are admitted to the hospital or they come to the emergency department.
Mr. Stevens' current asthma medications are high-dose budesimide and formoterol inhaler, also a tiotropium inhaler. And also, as we talked about, prednisone, 20 milligrams PO daily. And so given his current need for oral corticosteroids and his symptoms, medications, what would be your recommendations for next steps?
Well, I mean, Dave, this patient is pretty much getting all the kitchen sink that we have for severe asthma. Now, obviously, he's on ICS LABA and he's on a long-acting muscarinic LAMA. So he's on triple therapy, although not in one device. But one of the biggest concerns that he's on prednisone every day, 20 milligram is a pretty hefty dose. Even 5 milligram a day is a hefty dose for this gentleman who, and you know, the doses of steroids, obviously there is a dose dependency here. 20 milligram is an immune suppressant dose. So I'm always worried about these patients because they're not only at risk of recurrent infections, but multiple other systemic comorbidities. So my biggest concern when I see these type of patients is, are they using their inhaler correctly? Are they compliant? So, you know, some patients, believe it or not, they are on these medications, they are prescribed these medications, but they may not be taking them or taking them correctly. So before I jump into adding more therapies and costing the health system and the patient more money, I want to make sure he's taking the inhalers correctly and check technique. I want to make sure that he's taking it every day. And if he is, and he's still symptomatic, he's had these exacerbations, then, you know, one of the important things is to consider whether he would be a candidate for further therapies, and mostly targeted therapies like biologics. I think that's the beauty about biologic, is that they allowed us, at least some of them, to get these patients off prednisone if they're used correctly. So I think that's where we, you know, my thought would be. The other thing that I would be doing is, you know, we know he has GERD, so I want to make sure that he has comorbidities that are being treated, not only diagnosed, but treated. So I want to make sure he's on PPI. I also want to make sure his upper airway is being treated. So I don't know if he's on nasal steroids or rinses. He has polyposis. I may get ENT involved here. I may do a CT scan of his sinuses to see if he needs any surgical intervention or referral. But that's the beauty about managing severe asthma. It is not just a one size fits all. There are multiple things that we can implement, and usually it's a multidisciplinary approach for this type of patient to get them better.
Great. I'm curious. I mean, you touched on it. I want to ask specifically and drill down a little further. What's your concerns in this patient who's on oral corticosteroids? You mentioned that 20 milligrams, you know, is a hefty dose. I mean, would you be less concerned if he's only on 10? Or how would you, you know, what are your concerns specifically around that using OCS?
You know, to be honest, any oral steroids chronically is worrying. In fact, for many years, we thought just short courses of oral steroids are okay, but they're not. In fact, there are multiple studies now have shown even short courses of oral steroids have been associated with increased risk of comorbid conditions. Definitely, there is a dose-dependent effect. In his case, 20 milligram is immune suppressant, so he needs to be on actually what we call PJP prophylaxis to prevent him from getting opportunistic infections in his lungs. But that's beyond the point, but he is also at high risk of bone loss, skin thinning, hypertension, blood glucose abnormalities, glaucoma, cataracts, you name it, and even vascular thrombosis and increased cardiovascular complications. So pretty much any oral steroid, patients who are dependent on oral steroids are really at a high risk. And one of the biggest issue that we face is that we try to get them off as quickly but as safely as possible. In this case, I will try, once we stabilize him, try to cut down slowly on his oral steroids to eventually maybe wean him off. Of course, I cannot stop it cold turkey like this because he will get sicker. And so it has to be done very, very carefully and slowly.
Sure, that makes complete sense. So the next question would be, and again, you touched on it briefly, what biologic options or targeted options would you consider to reduce this patient's need for oral corticosteroids and also to improve his asthma symptoms or reduce his exacerbations?
Well, I mean, the era of biologics now in asthma has really opened up really options for us, for patients like this gentleman. I think when you look at oral steroid-dependent asthmatics, there are three biologics who have been shown in clinical trial to reduce oral steroids. Two have been shown to do so in patients with eosinophilic asthma. For example, if this gentleman still has high eosinophils on blood testing, despite being on prednisone, then an anti-IL-5s like mepolizumab and benralizumab has been shown to reduce the need for oral steroid, and they could be an option. Now, if his blood eosinophils are normal right now, and he's been on oral steroids, then the only option available approved by FDA is dupilumab, which targets an IL-4 receptor, which has been shown in clinical trial to reduce the need for oral steroids and even eliminate the need for oral steroids without biomarker type of measurement. So these are the three options, and obviously I would like to look at the biomarker profile, his FeNO, his blood eosinophils. If all of these are normal now that he's on oral steroids, then dupilumab would be the only choice. If his eosinophil counts are high, then there are other choices, which would be including anti-IL-5s like mepolizumab, benralizumab, and then, of course, dupilumab has an important effect in these patients as well. So those are the options, obviously, not too many, but there are at least some options to get this patient like him off oral steroids.
Sure. Question, if you did start one of those biologics, how would you, do you wait a few weeks and then begin to taper off his prednisone, or do you begin within the first week or two after you started the biologic? Or I'm curious just how you make that transition.
Yeah, you know, biologics, the patients have to know also, it's not just a one-shot thing, you know. Some patients, like himself, like this patient, may have a very quick response. Within a week or two, he'll feel better, his lung function improves. But others may take time. So I have to be very patient. I would start him on biologic and keep him on the prednisone until the visit, maybe 2 or 3 weeks after. And if his symptoms are improving, then I'll start cutting down very shortly. Like in his case, he's on 20 milligram. I may go down to 15 and see how he's doing. And then every 5 days, cut down by 5 milligram. One of the biggest concern with patients on him, on high prednisone, is to, if you cut it down quickly, they not only may exacerbate their asthma, but they may drop their blood pressure because of adrenal insufficiency. I do not use the biomarkers to guide me. I look at asthma control mostly and how the patient is doing. Asthma control test, the ACT, but also lung function. And then I start going down slowly. But these patients deserve very close monitoring when you start cutting down the prednisone. And I think it takes quite a bit of education for the patient, because patients think, okay, I just got the shot, then I'm going to stop the prednisone. That doesn't really work like this. And sometimes it takes a few weeks for us to succeed in getting them off.
Well, I'm curious, given that biologic agents are targeted at specific immune messengers, would you start a patient on a biologic if their biomarker findings were, say, less than anticipated? And one example would be, say, the patient's blood EOs were about, I don't know, 140. Their FeNO was less than 25. Would that prevent you from using dupilumab or, say, another biologic, assuming the patient still has a few exacerbations per year and they're also on already, high dose combination inhaler?
Yeah, I think if a patient is on prednisone, it doesn't matter what their biomarkers are. In fact, prednisone can shift the biomarker down. So, but there is no question that in his case, you know, if his biomarkers were normal, despite being on prednisone, but he's still exacerbating, then dupilumab would be the choice in treatment. If he was not on prednisone, then a biomarker profile will be helpful in leading me or helping me choose which biologic to pick. Obviously, most of the biologics available right now in non-oral steroid-dependent patients are targeting what we call type 2 high asthma. In his case, he has allergic asthma. He does have high type 2 asthma. We don't know what his blood eosinophils are, but if they're high, then he may have eosinophilic and allergic asthma. I'd like to look at the IgE, then he may confirm the allergic asthma. In this case, I will look at FeNO as well. And if FeNO is very high, it suggests a high IL-13 activity. And that helps me guide which biologic to choose. Another thing in this patient are his comorbidities. The fact that he has chronic sinusitis and nasal polyposis limits the choice of biologic to only few that are approved for that indication. And right now there are 3 biologics approved for chronic rhinosinusitis with nasal polyps, including omalizumab, which is mostly approved for allergic asthma, but not for oral steroid-dependent asthma. Mepolizumab, which is approved for oral steroid-dependent asthmatics if they have high eosinophils, and also for eosinophilic asthma if he has high eosinophils and nasal polyposis. And then the last one is dupilumab, which is approved for both oral steroid-dependent asthma but also for nasal polyposis. So looking at the biomarker profile, the need for oral steroid, and the comorbidities, and of course, with a shared decision-making with the patient, all these make help us decide which biologic to pick for that patient. Of course, sometimes the choice may be dictated by higher up, meaning the insurance companies who are paying for these drugs. And so sometimes we have to get prior authorization and get to work with them to get approvals because of the cost of these agents.
Well, thank you so much. That's all the time we have for today. In our next podcast, we will discuss the management of patients with moderate to severe asthma, the issues with oral corticosteroids in that setting from the immunologist's perspective. I'd like to thank Dr. Hanania for taking time to speak today about treatment using targeted biologic agents, methods to optimize referrals for those patients with moderate to severe disease. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. We hope you will tune in to other podcasts in this series, as well as some of the many other types of CME programs that MedLearning Group offers. I would like to give a special thank you to our supporters, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, Inc., and Santa Fe, who provided an educational grant for this activity. Have a great day.